You're listening to Brazen Bookworm's Unrighteous Reading Rebellion, a reform book snob's journey and musings through all things romance. Some language may not be safe for all ears. Frequent use of sarcasm may occur. You're listening to Brazen Bookworm's Unrighteous Reading Rebellion, a reform book snob's journey and musings through all things romance. Some language may not be safe for all ears. Frequent use of sarcasm may occur.
Yay, here we are. Woohoo! So we're doing it again. We're doing another book club because there's so many amazing books that have come out, and there's so many amazing authors that we want to feature, and there's so many amazing things to talk about by Avery Maxwell, and talking about your last first kiss, and maybe even a little bit about Without a Hitch and One Little Secret, because it's been a while since we've had a chance to talk to you, and you've got a lot going on. So, all right, quick intro, who you are, what you do, let everybody know all the wonderful things about you.
I'm Avery Maxwell. I write a lot of small town found family. Actually, that's pretty much all I write, small town found family. I try to keep things light, but there's always a little emotion in there too. And I'm a relatively new author. I'm coming up on my 3-year anniversary, June 16th. So that's very exciting. And I'm a mom of 4. That's pretty much my life. Lots of sports and writing.
I love it. I love it. So thank you for joining us to talk about all the things. I don't think it's any surprise to anybody that this is not the first book that we've all read by you. So usually we start off with, you know, is this the first book you've read by this author, and how did you find them? I think we've read everything to date. And I know I found you through Ron, actually through a gift away in Melanie Harlow's group for Seth, for an arc for Seth's book. And then Julie, how did you find Avery?
You forced me into it.
Twisted that arm. Susie, what about you?
You, but you didn't force me. I fell down the rabbit hole.
You're right. You're right. She didn't force me. You've got to read this.
Yes.
That's not forcing, right?
And I think it might have been right after Preston. So it was probably one of those, she tore my heart out. Here, go read this. Because that's what fangirls do. The more we cry, the more we push the book. Ron, how'd you find Avery?
Right after Beating My Heart released, I found it had released. I didn't know that it had. I found an ad for Cross My Heart and fell completely in love with it and said, I gotta follow this chick because she's gonna be good. And she is. So Saving His Heart, I joined her team, and Romancing His Heart, I got a promotion. And I'm her PA now. So I'm gonna fangirl too. That's my job. I'm a professional fangirl.
I love that.
Thrown in like head first.
I did.
We
were releasing book 4 when I got the promotion, and we've done 7 cents. Wow. Congratulations, lady. <That's right.
laughs> Because your last first kiss is book 11. Mm-hmm. So you're coming up on that sweet dozen. I love it.
I'm so excited.
And I know we've said we've read them all. And let's talk about, do we have a favorite book? And every time I read another book that you write, it becomes my favorite. And I go back to certain ones and I'm like, Colton will always own a piece of my heart forever. I latched onto him real early, that whole Peter Pan element. And I knew there was something deeper. And I was like, oh, Colton's going to he's going to be the one. And then I read another book you write and I'm like, no, it's, and I'm like, it's Ashton. But every time you write a book, I'm like, that's the one. And I already know who's going to be the one. But I know he's not getting his book for a while, so we're not going to talk about that today. But Susie, you have a favorite?
I do. It's going to be Preston. Yeah.
It's always been Preston for you.
Ashton was up there, but he didn't quite win. Preston, yeah, definitely.
I didn't cross over to Dylan. I was shocked. I honestly was shocked. Everybody's favorite is Preston. Like 90% of people's favorite is Preston. And I was surprised at how many people jumped ship for Dylan.
I did. But
ooh.
Ashton, I did. Loki was my favorite, has always been my favorite. And Dylan is something special. He's just got something different.
I'll admit it. Loki was your favorite because you had to like scold me about how I wrote using a gun.
Yes.
Okay, there's
no,
a story
that's not
there.
How it works. No, that's not how that works.
No, Maxwell tried so, so hard to explain it to me. Like, he had me hold one. Like, we really tried hard. And he tried very hard to explain it to me. And it just did not translate to words. So when I wrote it, and Ron's reading it, and she's like, what did you do? I was like, what? So she helped me fix that.
Diagrams.
I love that. How amazing, though, to have like an in-house person who can look at something and go, that's not how that works.
Yeah.
Ron gets my work about the halfway point when I'm ready to quit and I don't think that I can move forward. And then she's the first one who gets it when I have the really, really crappy draft.
Julie, who's your favorite?
Oh, goodness. I was a Loki fan, but Dylan's just special. And we'll get to why later.
We'll just start with the questions then, right? Let's start with quotes.
Okay.
We'll start with quotes because what we like to do the quotes up front so the authors can hear, you know, we didn't used to do it that way, but we're doing it that way now because everybody likes the likes to hear what we like best. Susie, what's yours?
I had a few, but I guess my favorite one is going to have to be, you don't need another person to take care of you, sweetheart. What you need is someone willing to take care of you. I need to be that man for you. And I desperately want you to see yourself as I see you.
Good stuff. Did you want to read one of the other ones?
I want to be your last first date, your last first dance, your last first puck. And yeah, I want to be your last first kiss.
That quote, I think that's like, you know, every book has the quote.
Mm-hmm.
That's, you know, when you get there as a reader and you're like, oh, that's where the title came from, and it hits you and you're like, oh, that was a Kindle slam mm-hmm. moment for me. That was one of those, and I hugged my Kindle and I was like, that's the line, that's the quote, I love that quote.
Julie, do you want to read yours?
I have a bunch, but we'll just give two. You're the rainbow and my rainstorm of a life. Everybody needs that rainbow mm-hmm. in their life, whether it's a friend or a partner. So I really like that one. The other one was, are you okay? I ask again. Yeah, I was making sure you were still here. He lays back down and is out in seconds. I can't breathe. I can't move. I don't even blink, but my hands shake and my head pounds with his words. This kid just carved my heart straight from my chest and is now using it as a pillow. I have my first child's from my first marriage, and I think that's why Dylan is special to me, because he took Nick and was just like, he's mine, you know.
Yep.
So it was special.
The kids in this book are, and the interaction between the kids and Dylan is close to my heart. I'm a second mom too, so it reads true. It reads that whole inclusiveness thing is it's on. Michelle?
Yeah, so, and I want to tag off of what you just said about that, because I actually had another reader message me yesterday because she was reading, she like turned her whole world off and she had sat down to finally read Your Last First Kiss, and she posted this in the group, and then I was like, can I share this? She said, it's like the love story is secondary to everything else. It's so well written, the way the children are included and their struggles, and everything is just so well rounded. And it's a full story, not just a love story. And that's how I felt while I was reading it, because we read so much romance and sometimes it is really just about the romance. And then you read stories that are complete stories that have, and I think I messaged Avery at one point and I said, thank you for being a storyteller. There's a difference to me between writing something and telling a story. You know, writing something is part of telling the story, but this is a complete story. It's not just a love song. It's the whole thing. And I appreciated that so much.
I was actually really worried about that. And I actually texted Catherine and Lucy and said, I think I have a problem because this isn't just the romance between the two characters. Like, it's as much about his relationship with the kids as it is about her. And so, I'm worried now that it's not like a true romance. And Lucy cut me off immediately and was like, the more love you can put on the page, the better. And so I was about 75% in at that point, and I just like went straight through to finish it because I liked how the story was going, but I was really worried. Like, I hadn't read a lot of stories that were like framed that way. So I needed that like push, that encouragement. And that was exactly what she said to me. The more love you can put on the page, the better. And so that just like cut out all of my reservations about how I was framing the story. And I'm happy with how it turned out.
That gives me goosebumps. That right there, that quote, the more love you can put on the page.
That is true.
That, yep. It's so true because, you know, we think of romance as being a love story between two people. And more often than not, it isn't. It's a love story between them and their families and the people who surround them and who make up their whole life. And for Penny, that's her whole life, is her kids. It's her family. And that is just the quotes I pulled. The two that my favorites are not even from either of the main characters. The first one is actually Lachlan, and it's right in chapter one. Like, you hit it bang right out of the box. Sometimes you don't need to be defended. You need to be heard. When Lachlan's talking to Penny, he says, Jesus, Penny, I hope that someday you'll be able to see your potential like the rest of us do. And that's the depth of the people around her that surround her, that it's not just her and Dylan, that it is this full community. And then Remy saying later on, baggage lets you know you're alive. And I've never had something resonate so strongly because it's so true. When you think about the baggage that you bring to something, the more baggage you have, different baggage you have, lets you know that you're a survivor, that you're still going on, that you're still alive. Because I don't think anybody gets as far as at least we have in life without having some baggage. And if you do, there might be another problem there that you're not even aware of yet. Yeah. But, you know, that was so relevant and resonant to me, of that baggage lets you know you're still alive. You still have things to live for. You still have people who care for you. And that well-rounded story aspect of it, not just being about the two of them, but it being about all of them,
was key.
That's absolutely why I have so many characters in my stories. And I had to sit and sit with it for a minute because I didn't have a ready answer for it. But the more that I thought about it, the more that I realized it's because it's how I live my life. It's never just been me and one other person. You know, life happens in the chaos, like I say, like it really does. Like, that's where, you know, it's all the relationships that build the tapestry of your life. And it's not just one other person that does that. It's a whole community of people. And exactly. Everybody that's in my life that stays there for any amount of time makes a mark on me. And so why wouldn't my characters be the same way? Because when you read the stories, there's so much of me in every single book. You know, anybody that knows me really well, like, they can pick it out. They pick out my insecurities. They pick out my weaknesses. And it all goes into those stories. And it's what makes my characters, I think, resonate with people.
Mm-hmm. I agree. In my review, I'll get to my quote, but in my review, I said that YLFK, which is what we call it, is the real world on the page, all the messy, glorious, steamy, tragic, beautiful truth of it, and a happy ever after too. And that is quintessentially your work. I mean, all of your books are that way. They're messy and they're real, and the characters are people you want to invite to sit down and have a meal with you. And I think that it goes to that, the more love you can put on the page, the better. And the more that you do that, because I've been a fan from the beginning, the more that you do that, the truer your work gets, the more it resonates with people. And this is the first, I'm going to out you, because this is the first book that we've ever gotten to the finish line with that she said, I like this book. Usually by the time she's sending it to the editor for the final edits, she's like, I hate this thing. I just don't want it. I don't even want to look at it again. And this time she's like, I think I like this book. And I'm like, where's Avery and what did you do with her?
Since after my first round of edits, first round of edits with an editor, I go through at least 6 rounds on my own, adding things in. But I had a calm that I've never had before. And it really kind of freaked me out for a little bit, because I just felt okay. Like, I wasn't panicking. I wasn't sweating, which is what normally happens. I didn't feel sick to my stomach. I just felt good. I felt good about the story. I felt good about the story that I told. And I felt good that it was honest. It was an honest story about a family coming together in the way that that happened.
Yeah.
I have another quote. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead. No, go ahead.
And it was when you brought up your review. It's actually, I put it in my review. I don't need all of you, Penny. I just need the pieces no one else has earned.
Yes.
That Dylan. Whew.
Right.
Yep.
Yeah.
And that's a really good segue to my quotes. The first one starts, I don't know, just I don't know, not quite halfway. It says, you've got a lot on your plate, but I only have me. I have plenty of room for your mess. I just need a chance to earn it. My mind goes blank. You want to earn my mess? I just love that. That he sees her so clearly, and that he is all in for it. That was cool for me. The other quote, and I had a hard time picking which one of these I was going to share, because I love every single one of them, because I'm attached to the shoes. The quote is, I like the pile of shoes, he rumbles. I don't know what it is about them, but it makes this feel like a home to me. It's always been just my shoes, one or two pair. But these, he gestures to the pile of cleats, sneakers, books, and slippers scattered beside the door or the front door. These look like happy dinners and loud nights, busy carpools and exhausted, beautiful moms. When I take my shoes off here and place them with the pile, it gives me something I didn't know I was missing. We defended these shoes from the very beginning. And in every single place that they are, every time I read them, I glance toward my front door where my messy pile of shoes is. And that is what makes it home.
But for me, it was, we had just gone through, I mean, if you have kids, you know how this happens. All of a sudden you have 6 different sizes of the same cleat and you don't know what fits anymore. And we had just kind of gone through that. And I watched the progression of all 3 boys, like going through these shoes and how much they were growing. And then no matter how many times we pick them up, there's just always that pile there that you're going to trip over. And it's annoying and it's frustrating. And why can't they pick them up? But at the end of the day, tomorrow they're going to be a little bigger. And the day after that, they're going to be a little bigger. And so like the shoes for me was always related to Dylan. I knew, like, I don't know a lot when I go into writing the stories, but there were a few things with Dylan just from my own personal experience and the shoes were one of them that I knew was going to be, it was kind of going to show his growth through the story. So in one of the iterations, because there's a lot of pieces of this story, like when I'm writing, everything kind of, so I write like 6 different versions of it basically. And in one of them, there was a version where he was talking to Ashton over a video conference, and Ashton was playing with this pink sparkly shoe and he just kept staring at it. And that was the start of it. When he left Ashton's home, that was the first time he saw a pile of shoes and felt lonely. I don't know if that ended up in the final version or not, but
the shoe's there. It's just not in the same place. I mean, the same scene is there. It just got rearranged. But that it was from that very first minute where this little teeny tiny little girl's shoe that didn't fit his friend's life. I think it for me it was like it's that's the moment he started questioning his own. Was what this thing that doesn't belong in, I mean, because Ashton with a little pink shoe, I mean, that little bit juxtaposition. I think that that's the moment that Dylan really started, in my mind, started questioning what he was doing with himself in a job that he didn't like, you know, and doing something that somebody else decided he should be doing.
And I think too, it showed how shallow his life was. He didn't allow that depth.
And for somebody to have that big of an impact, there have been other books where things have come in. I mean, we all remember Ocean Kitchen Closet, and there's, you know, little things that stick. And in each book, there's something that sticks a little bit more. And for me, it was the shoes. You know, it's like, okay, I want a sticker of a pile of shoes by a front door. And it seems so insignificant. It's a pile of shoes, but it's not, because the reality of it is, right, if you are part of a family that has more than one person in it, you know, you've got three people in the house, five people in the house, whatever, you walk in the front door, you're tripping over someone's shoe, you're kicking a shoe out of the way, you're looking for your shoes in a pile of someone else's shoes. If you're a parent, you've all had the moment where you're like, where the hell are your shoes? We're leaving in like 30 seconds. They were right here. We've all had that moment of the pile of shoes, digging to find something, or the, this fit yesterday. How does it not fit today? You know, so you make that relevance, and it becomes something that everybody can latch on to, whether it's because it's with their own kids or the house that they grew up in or somebody whose family they went to visit. And I mean, even people come to visit our house, they know they walk in the front door, they take their shoes off. So sometimes the pile of shoes grows from, I think there's like nine pair over there. There's only four of us in this household. There's like nine pairs of shoes over there. Sometimes there's like 20 pairs of shoes over there. And at the end of the day, you're picking through it to see that's yours. But it's this reality of everybody comes into a space and creates their own chaos. They create their own mess. And it starts at the front door with this pile of shoes. And that's kind of what it was for me. It was like, you know, Kenny's always talking about her chaos and her mess. And for her, it really does start at the front door, the minute you walk in the door with this pile of all of these things. And then it just kind of becomes part of who she is. So when Dylan walks in the door and accepts and loves that pile of shoes sitting there, for me, it's that him accepting and acknowledging that that's just the way her world is. And he's willing to walk right into the middle of it and embrace it and just kind of keep going. So I don't know if that's what you meant by it. That's what I got from it.
And even something that was going to symbolize his growth, you know, from being just lonely and not willing to accept the love into his life, to going through and kind of realizing how shallow his life was, to all of a sudden seeing this family and realizing it was such a stark contrast to how he was living before, and wanting to move forward with that.
Right. Wanting.
Yes. Yeah. And even needing. I think it was more than a simple want for him. He needed that in his life. So, and he didn't know he needed it until he was in the middle of it. And then it became really relevant.
All right.
I know we've got tons of questions, and I'm just going to sit and breathe in that. When are we getting a pile of shoe stickers? Who's on that?
I made some quickly for the signing I was at last weekend, and it was very funny because everybody that would come up to my table, there was like two camps, one who would see it and like just jaw drop and like claw for them. And the ones that came up and was like, why do you have a pile of shoes? And like, it's the book. And so, you know, it's right. Like you see that sticker and you're like, why the heck does she have a pile of shoes on a sticker? But they are coming. We're working on my swag store right now, and there's going to be a couple different iterations of them, so they're coming.
And now I need one.
Well, if Avery has them at SAS in July, I'll grab some for you, and I'll send them. And oh yeah, we have lots of other questions, but I'm going to, because you just mentioned that, I'm going to just toss this one in here. I know you just came back from a signing. Mm-hmm. What's the next? Talk to us about where you're going to be so people can come see you in person.
I think I have a little bit of a break, sort of, because I don't have another signing until July, the end of July. That'll be SASC. And then after that, I think is Vegas in October. And then I have another little break. I'm probably going to mess this up. Then I know I'm doing Paris, Chicago, Charleston. They're all on my website and they're on my group too.
So I will link all that so people can go and find you.
Did you heard that Paris, right?
Uh-huh. I'm so excited about that.
I'm excited and I'm sad because that means she's not going to be with us in April, but I'm really excited that she's going to Paris for this.
Yeah. I don't know whose life I'm living right now, but I'm really thankful for everything.
Just enjoy it. Live in the moment.
Absolutely.
Just enjoy it. You know, I try to point out to people sometimes it's like you're living this life because you've worked hard for it, because you've earned it, because people have recognized that it's where you're supposed to be. It always seems to take us a lot longer to catch up with that fact when somebody's telling us that and we're like, nah, eventually, or maybe not, they catch up with the fact that this is where you're supposed to be. But man, I wish we could be in Paris with you, maybe in a couple years. But
you'll have to make a podcast with us.
Yes, super exciting. So we do have questions. I just kind of jumped the ball there because we do that sometimes. Ron, you had the first one.
We kind of talked about it. So you're coming up on, I know you're working on book 12. And how does that feel? Is that like super surreal for you?
It is and it isn't. I mean, I kind of got this bad advice when I first started. You know, it was like, get as many books out as you can, as quickly as you can. And it's not necessarily bad advice. It just was it's difficult to do. So I always, like, in my 3-year plan, because as soon as I decided to make this a business, I sat down and I had a 2-year plan, a 3-year plan, and a 5-year plan. They were very vague, but in terms of the books, and I always knew, like, about, like, the 3-year mark, I'd have 12 books. Like, it was just, that was a given. That's what you do. That's, if you want to succeed, you have to push. And so, I mean, it'll be a little over 3 years when I do it, but I very rarely miss my goals because I will force myself to make them. And it's probably the first time that I'm giving myself a little slack. Like the book will probably be done by my 3-year anniversary, but it'll still need to go through editing and stuff. So I'm taking that as a win.
That's excellent.
I'm trying to see where we are in the questions.
Oh. Well, because it makes sense to do it. I'm gonna follow it up. You've got your plan. I know some of the answers, but I'm gonna ask anyway. Can you talk about what's changed in your process? I mean, I know when you wrote Cross My Heart, you just kind of did it as a I'm doing this thing during homeschooling my kids. Talk about how your process has changed, because I know that even in the time that I've been with you, there's been major change. You're one of the hardest working authors I know. So
I don't know that I can actually pinpoint exactly what's changed. I just know that I push myself harder with each book. Each one that comes out, I kind of sit with it for a little bit, see how it does, take any feedback that I get, and I go right back into the next one. And I just know, like, my only goal with each book is to do better than the last one. Whatever that is, like, whether it's learning, you know, something new grammar wise or structure wise, like, it's always been something, like, I've always been learning over this 3 years. Like, there hasn't been a week that's gone by where I haven't watched a podcast or I haven't taken a class or I, you know, haven't learned something. And I try really hard to put that into each new story. I think the biggest change will be, with editing and kind of learning more about story structure. You know, there's a whole method to this madness that I had no idea about. I think I'm a natural storyteller, but I didn't know necessarily how to hit the beats. And so, you know, I'm working with editor Jess now, and I'm doing a lot of Zoom meetings with her. So I do know that, you know, the difference before was I would do it and it'd go and it would get all, like, just cleaned up. But now I'm learning, like, how to make the story flow better. And so I'm hoping as I'm writing this next one, it's already, I see a huge change in the way that I'm going about it, because I hear what she's been teaching me in my head as I'm doing it. You know, I got 12 chapters into this one and I realized, like, literally I heard her voice in my head and said, this story starts at chapter 10. And it did. Like, it, so it's all that stuff. And I cried because it's painful to cut that many chapters. But at the end of the day, we realized, like, I need to do that to know my characters. You know, I need all that stuff. And it's, you know, it's not backstory. It's not, some of it can get added back in, but that's just going to have to be part of my new process, is writing that and knowing that the majority of it is going to be cut before it ever gets anywhere.
I think your process, watching your process, feels a lot like you are a plotter on the page. I mean, it's not like you do your outline and say, okay, I'm going to do this, but it's like that first chunk of your book is, oh, this is what the book is about. Now I'll write the book.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's true, I guess. I never thought of it that way, but yeah, it's a lot of stuff helping me learn who they are and, you know, where the story is going. And that's probably true. It's probably a really, really exhaustive outline that I write.
That I love reading.
But well, then, like, you know where my head is, I think. But then it's like, so when I say that, like, I do this process, the first draft is garbage. It's a hot steaming pile of garbage. It just, there's no emotion in it. There's no, there's definitely no descriptions in it, because descriptions are the hardest thing for me to write. And so I do the first draft, and then I do another draft adding in those descriptions. And I do a third draft adding in the emotional pieces of it. And I do a fourth draft adding in something else. And, like, there's six, by the time I'm done, there's six drafts that I've written before it goes to the editor. And that's, I've tried to change that way. I've tried to, you know, make it more efficient, but it just doesn't work for me. My brain, when I'm writing the first draft, the story just comes out. And then on each pass, my brain focuses on one thing to improve. And so I just have to do that.
Writing is a process. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to put on my little English teacher and my editor hat here and say thank you for being a coachable author. I fangirl Jess hard. I have, at some point, I want to meet her. I want to fangirl over her because editors can fangirl other editors. I'm saying it right now. We can do that. But recognizing that it's a process and finding someone who understands your process and can help you grow, growth as an author, being coachable as an author, understanding that your process is not going to be the same as everybody else's process, and that there's a method to your process. And if your process is six drafts until you get it where you want it to be, then that's your process. And it's working because your books are growing in popularity. They're growing in their character development within themselves. I challenge anybody to read book one and then read Your Last First Kiss and say they don't see a progression of growth and depth and expansion in your writing. And that comes from being coachable and from understanding that your process over time is going to change and it's not going to be linear and it's going to go off the rails and then it's going to choose a different path. And then it might weave its way back to the original path and then it might veer a little bit, but there's a reason we teach drafting, and there's a reason that we teach multiple methods of drafting, whether it's an organizer or a brain dump or a verbal vomit into a dictation program, whatever your process is. I love that you embrace that that's your process and that you want. There's steps.
I worked so hard to improve each one that I thought, There should be a better way to do this. I should be able to do this faster. There's a lot of shoulds in my life that make things really difficult for me. Mm-hmm. And I'm just now coming to terms with, and it took just saying, listen, this is how you write. You need that information. So write it and know. And I did this time. And I knew as soon as I got to chapter 12 that the story started at chapter 10. You know, but I do have people that will read book one and then get to book three and be like, this is a different author. Like, there's no way that the person who wrote book three wrote book one. And I've gone back and forth with, you know, I spoke to Jess about it. I spoke to my publisher. I'm like, I really want to redo all the books. Like, they're not where I was. They're not where I am now. And they're very adamant about, you can't do that because you're going to continue to grow and you can't continue to grow with those stories if you're still trying to bring the other ones up to speed. Like, people fell in love with that first book, they're gonna read them all the way through, and they're gonna see your progression as an author. And that's just the natural, you know, wave of writing. Mm-hmm. Like, try to let that go and acknowledge that some people won't like it. And it's, you know, I wish sometimes that they would read the other ones, but it is what it is. That's part of the world.
It is. And you will never be able to, you can't please all the people all the time. You know, you can't even please all the people some of the time, but you'll please some of the people all of the time. And then you have to find your groove. You're the writer, and the books that you put out there, people will gravitate to because they feel a connection to it. Mm-hmm. Readers grow just like authors do.
Yeah.
And if you read book one all the way through to book 30 in an author's backstory or backlist, and you don't feel like the author has grown and you don't feel like you've grown as a reader, then there's something else there too. I'd much rather, I've talked about this before, I love diving into a first book by an author and reading all the way through because it makes me happy to see how I'm growing as a reader while they're growing as an author.
Yeah.
And that's key to success. If you stay where you were,
or you always want to go back and cycle through and circle through something, you never move forward if you keep going back.
You have to just,
at some point, you got to let it go.
Mm-hmm. And just
accept that it was exactly what it needed to be when you wrote it. And then just keep going
and keep
building, because readers see that.
Compromised a little bit. I'm not going to touch the inside of the story, but we are recovering all of them.
I love that. And we're going to talk about that in a second. I know Julie wanted to jump in on something, but we're going to talk about the covering. Yeah, Julie.
Well, it's funny that you were mentioning the first book of the Broken Heart series and where you are compared to where you were. I have been pushing one of my best reader friends to read your books. And she finally started with, oh my gosh, my brain just left.
First book?
The first book.
Cross My Heart.
Yeah,
Cross My Heart. Thank you. Cross, I'm like, heart. All I kept thinking is Broken Heart. And that's anyway. And she messaged me and she's like, I don't know about this. And I'm like, just keep pushing through, you know, push through, you know. And she says, I'm currently on book three. Have you read this? Because this one is killing me. She said, fucking killing it. I'm only 37% in Poor Preston. Gigi fucking, she's from the UK, cracks me up. She's so funny. Fuck, I can't read for tears. 72%, he's in a coma. I mean, this is like constant. Like, they're still rolling. Someone give him a fucking heart now. It just went on. I asked, I'm like, what's your husband saying? Because my husband, whenever I'm crying, he's like, why are you crying? I'm like, it's the book. And he's always like, why are you doing this to yourself? Needless to say, she's got it. She's got the Avery fever and loves it, and just messaged me and said, please tell me Loki gets a book. And I said, the next book. So it's just funny. She has seen your progression and has definitely become an Avery Maxwell fan.
And I love when other readers start to read somebody that I love, that we love, and all of a sudden they're like, the hell took me so long?
Right.
They start right. to get into books and they're like, what? The best one I loved recently was, why didn't you tell me? And I'm like, dude, should I send you the screenshots that go back like a year? Where the hell have you been? I know everybody's busy, but come on. And then they're like, yeah, okay, my fault, my problem. I get it. I'm on board now. I understand. And it's like, well, about damn time. But it's another thing that goes with me is that this community is so vast that we keep finding people who introduce us to new authors, and we keep finding new people to introduce to authors that we love. And, you know, I think people get there when they're supposed to. I'm a firm believer in you hit things when you're supposed to, but I'm also a firm believer that some people need a good swift kick in the ass to put them on the right path. And I'm happy to be the person to give them a good swift kick in the ass and say, where the hell have you been? And why aren't you reading these books? So I know who you're talking about, Julie. And now I'm going to message her and say, Damn it, where the hell have you been? But anyway.
But what I told her, I'm like, for an author to be able to bring out that kind of emotion, I mean, that says a lot, you know, to your writing, about your writing.
Yeah. And I tell everybody, I would be a fan whether I was on the payroll or not. I was before, I will be, not that I'm ever going to go anywhere because I like the perks, but I get to read the books first. But I would, I've always been a fan, and I think that makes my job really easy. I mean, nothing about doing this job, Avery can tell you. I mean, none of it is easy. We all have stuff that we come up against. I mean, the industry is what it is, and it really does help when you absolutely adore what you do. And her books make it easy. Not, I mean, she's a great person too, but her books make it easy to love what I do, and I appreciate that so much.
Yeah,
easy to market.
Exactly, because all I have to do is tell the truth.
And it's easy to interact too, because there's an honesty in the books that people can relate to. We see that a lot in Love Club, which is Avery's Facebook group. And it's a very active group. There are some groups on Facebook. I really only get into book groups anymore. I get on Facebook to go to groups. And some of them are, you know, multi-author. Some of them are genre-based. Some of them are single author groups. And what I love about jumping into Love Club is that I'm going to find positivity, but I'm also going to find honesty, realism. It's not all, you know, roses and daisies. And yeah, there are roses, but there's definitely thorns too. And it's not someone, it's something that somebody might be going through. And there's a connection that you feel, not just to the books, but to people who read the same books you do and the same style of books you do. And when you create a community where people can be, real and genuine and honest. And so, you know, we're recording this on Thursday, and I always jump in on Thursday because you have the wellness check-in on Thursday, where the honesty is, it's not just good for the person who's having a rough time to get the feedback and to get support, but for other people who might be going through the same thing, to see that there are people out there that are willing to support them. You build that up in your books, where you have people who act as a solid support system. And even though there's something in each book that comes up against each character that's trying to pull them apart, drag them down, whatever, there are more people jumping in to say, we're part of your life, we're part of your community, we're here for the long haul, how can we help? And that resonates on a very deep level with readers that can then go to the group and say, oh, I get it. It's not just something that she writes about. It's kind of like what she lives, and it's in the group. And you surround yourself with a group of people who also want to live that way.
Well, that's because, you know, when I first started, I tried to do what I thought was right, what everybody was doing. And I learned really quickly that that wasn't going to work for me. I have four kids. My life is just, it's going constantly. And so I decided pretty quickly that the only way for me to move forward would be to give them all of me. And that means that I'm not dressed most of the time. It means that my hair is really brushed. It just means you get me like my next door neighbor gets me. And you know, I spent a lot of my life feeling lonely and left out. And so when I created the group and I realized that I wasn't the only one feeling like that, I really put that at the heart of the group. And that's, a lot of that is my stories too. So, you know, a lot of the stories come from me and the group comes from me. And so I feel it's kind of like a full circle when you're reading the books and you go to the group and then, you know, you talk with me, it's all kind of the same brand, isn't the right word, but it's all the same feeling in the three faces. And that was really important to me.
And that's what I was going to say about the group is, it lets people know they're not alone. You know, your problems may be different, but it shows that people are still struggling and it's okay to struggle and there's support there. And so that's what you've created and it's beautiful.
Yeah.
We work very hard to keep it like that. But
we do work hard.
Yeah, it's not just me. I couldn't do it myself. It got to the point with that, especially Thursdays, where we have And it's the best part about it is that, you know, I have a team that's helping me, but there's also just members of the group that reach out to people struggling. And it's become this kind of snowball effect where everybody's checking on everybody and everybody knows that it's a safe space for whatever they need. So I'm really proud of that.
I think that was it. The Thursday post was one of the best surprises of any of the engagement stuff we do in Love Club. Because so many people stepped up. When it first started, and we thought, you know, okay, so nobody thinks that it's safe to do this. And the consistency of doing it every single week. Today, one of the very first posts was somebody just chiming in to say, I am so glad you do this every week. Because it makes people be seen.
Yeah, I recently went through all of them. I was trying to figure out like how long we've been doing it. And I was reading them all. And the first couple were just me being like cutting myself open and just being like, this is what I'm struggling with today. And I still do that. I still, you know, you get, and I'm making it sound like it's all doom and gloom. It's not, but I tell people what's going on in my life and what I'm struggling with because I'm not, you know, I learned recently that we all are struggling with something, and it's something that I've always known, but knowing that there's people out there like me has been really eye-opening.
Yep.
Well, social media is so often a highlight reel of everybody's life that when you can jump in someplace where you can see someone's highlight reel, but you can also see someone's editing floor cuts, you know, it makes it more real and it makes it more relevant. And, you know, we're talking books also, where when you can be that real on every page, it makes a difference to people. And they might be a little bit reluctant at first, because who wants to, you know, shred themselves and put themselves out there for people? Because let's be honest, there are certain elements of social media that if you shred yourself and put yourself out there, they're not going to be there to support you. They're going to shred you even more. And that makes people reluctant to say something. So when you have a space where you can be that real and honest and feel seen and valued and accepted, it makes it a lot easier for you to do that, possibly in other aspects of your life. So it's, you know, I'm going to bring it back to books somehow. Your books span this wide range of billionaires to everyday people to In Your Last First Kiss, the farthest from the billionaire lifestyle as you can get. But in every single one of them, there's this realism. There's something that somebody can relate to. There's somebody going through something. And then there's people who try to pull them down and shred them. And then there's an element of people who are like, nope, we're not going to let that happen, and surround those people in support and consistency. And, you know, you create that in different levels and different elements, and people start to become much more involved. So bringing it back to Last First Kiss a little bit, there's an element of romance that we could all jump into, and it's all fluff and it's all wonderful and it's great, and it's never something we're ever going to experience in our lives. And then there's an element of romance where it's, oh shit, okay, this is tough, this is hard, somebody's going through stuff, it's real. Yeah, it's an escape, because thank God it's not us, but it could be, or maybe it was, or maybe it's someone else we know. So bringing those elements in and bringing it back to Your Last First Kiss. I think I'm jumping over a whole bunch of questions here, but I'm just going to pull it in here, because we've talked about how, you know, your life is messy and it's out there, and you put it out there for people to see and people relate to it, which is amazing. And the squirrels just ran away with the next thought that I had. Wait a second. Let me grab the squirrels back. Your Last First Kiss is a standalone. All right, let's start there. It's a standalone. People can jump right in here that have never read anything by you. Because if somebody's reading, watching this, who's brand new, I don't want them to think, oh, I've got to start at book one and go through to 11 books. No, if you want to jump in right here with Your Last First Kiss, bam, jump right in with Your Last First Kiss. Why is it so different? Why the standalone aspect? How does it lead into things? Where does it sit within the Avery world?
I realized that I won't be doing an extended series or spinoff series the way that I did the Westbrooks again. It just, I was burned out by the time I got to Ashton. I really didn't want to write his story. I had to really push my way through it. And so I needed a new world, and I need to have the flexibility to go in any direction and create other worlds. So this was the one that pulled me away from the Westbrooks and is going to allow me to go in a lot of different directions. So, you know, standalones are good for marketing. They're good for my mental health. They're good for my writing, because it allows me to, you know, not be stuck in the same kind of, I hate to say rut, but that's kind of what you get in after there's 9 Westbrooks. So, you know, between across 2 different series. So writing that, they're all in there, you know, for most of them. It gets to be a little bit much. I wanted to kind of spread my wings a little bit. So there'll be a bunch of standalones coming, you know, like the next one. The only common theme will be a friend and the town, and it'll be new people with each book. It'll be new friends with each book. You know, they'll truly be standalones, but you'll get little hints of the stuff that people liked throughout the Westbrooks in it. And it took me a little bit to figure out how to do that, but it's with the mutual friend and the shared community.
I'm so excited for it. Okay, we're going to dispel this right now, because I keep seeing it asked in the group over and over and over again. Miller's book is not next. Mm-hmm. And if you read the epilogue in Your Last First Kiss, you'll know who the next book is. Mm-hmm. And it's not Miller. Maybe. Oh, maybe. Oh, okay. Tell us more. Go ahead.
I have two, for the first time ever, I have 2 stories going. The one is definitely further along, so that will probably be it. But it's kind of happening like it happened with Preston. When I was writing Trevor, Preston was just really barking in my ear. And so this one has a lot more notes than I usually have for the next one. Like, I have my next 3 years planned out, but this one will be a quick write, I think. So we'll see which way it goes.
I love that. That makes me even happier, because I love reading an epilogue and seeing, oh, okay, that's who goes next. I know what to look forward to. But then I love when an author throws a curveball and they're like, maybe, maybe not. But I also love that you write who's talking to you rather than trying to force a story because readers want this person's story. If that's not who's talking to you, that's not who you write. So I love that you do that. That makes me very happy, always. I love hearing an author say, nope, this is who's talking to me. This is who's going on the page.
I should say it's probably most likely going to be who you think it is, but I'll keep you guessing a little bit.
Okay with that. I like a little suspense. I like a little mystery. I'm here for it. Anybody else who isn't here for it, get with the program. Suspense is a thing. We like it. So, okay.
I'm getting messages.
Let's go back to questions, because we're already at an hour, and we want to be respectful of everybody's time, but I know we had other questions. Ask mine first, and then we'll do Julie's, because okay. They play into each other, and let's get the hard one out of the way.
Okay. What was the most difficult part of your last first kiss to write?
The most difficult? Making sure that I stayed true to children and adults of alcoholics. Mm-hmm. You know, I had alcoholism in my life growing up. And so I had a lot of firsthand experience with it. I also had a stepdad who never thought of himself as a step. So it was really making sure that I wasn't just telling my story, that I was telling a collective story of people. And it's really hard to do that when you're focused on one particular character, or, you know, maybe 2 characters. So as generic as I could, I tried to stay true to what a child would feel like in that situation and what an adult would be like after living with that for so long. That was most difficult. And what I was worried about the most was that I didn't want people to feel like I was using it as I wasn't being salacious with it. I wanted it to ring true, and I wanted it to be, I wanted to just shine a light on it a little bit, on the way that it really is. And so I had to kind of take all of these different stories to make their story happen.
What was your favorite scene
My favorite scene was between Dylan and Kai when he removed him from the house and, you know, kind of broke through. I don't want to give too much away, but it was that relationship that was my favorite, to see the growth of that progression. It meant a lot to me. And I think that there's a lot of families that are made up a lot of different ways. You know, I think the idea of a traditional family is not real anymore. Because there's so many different families that are made up in so many different ways.
It was powerful, that scene.
Yeah. I just wanted to, that was it for me. That was my favorite part to write, and it was also one of the hardest to write.
Yeah. It was beautiful.
Thank you.
It was really powerful. And I was wondering how that was gonna all come in, because everything up to that seemed very, he wasn't sure how hands-off he should be, how hands-on. Is this a kid glove situation? Is this a snap out of it situation? And it was the perfect combination of all of it. It didn't mm-hmm. read as overly heavy-handed. It didn't read as, you know, pie in the sky, everything's great, unicorns and rainbows. It kind of had this beautiful blend of, there's never a perfect solution, but we're going to find one that works.
And there's a lot of anger that comes in the teen years when you're blending families and when you're dealing with the stuff that he was dealing with, and it all just kind of comes to a head, and you have to get that kind of rage out somehow. And so I knew that teenage Kai was going to explode somehow. I knew going in, I knew what that felt like. I knew what having that anger sitting inside of you does to somebody. So I always kind of knew his story and how it was going to work out for him.
You want a certain element in a book that's going to be great, and that's going to be the easy solution. And then I appreciate the fact that it wasn't.
It couldn't be. It wouldn't.
Yeah.
You know, that's not how teenagers don't just get over things. They have to work and they have to process things, and then teenagers process things differently than adults do. And so for me, like, kind of showing how he would handle it truthfully was important.
I didn't know what was wrong, really. Right. Like, it was layers mm-hmm. that Dylan yeah. had to help peel away until he was able to get to the root.
And there was a really beautiful blend of, you know, when you talk about single parent romances, there's always the thing of how is the kid going to react? And sometimes it's totally in one direction or totally or the other, or right down the middle. This had a little bit of both, because there were so many kids involved. It wasn't just single child. There were so many layers and kids involved that the reader does get a little bit of everything. They get the instant acceptance. They get the acceptance and then the pullback. They get the uncertainty. They get to see a little bit of all of that blended in multiple characters who are so well developed in my mind that there was never a question of, wait a minute, which kid is that? Each kid had their own personality. They all reacted differently, but it wasn't overwhelming to me. It was that they were built so you knew exactly who was who. And even when there was a shift, you could say, okay, I see where that came from. I understand why that happened. And that's important, because when you do have a book with a lot of characters, I go one way or the other. Sometimes there are books that have a lot of characters and it's like, whoa, I'm getting lost. And then there are books like Your Last First Kiss, where it was like, I knew who each person was. I knew which kid was which kid, who they belonged to, because it's not just Penny's kids. You know, it's different families. And it's like, okay, and I know who this person is and that person. And they each had distinct personalities, and they were each dealt differently depending on their personalities. So that, to me, was really a beautiful way of moving the story along through the development of the other characters and how they reacted. So I appreciated that a lot, because sometimes they get bored if it's only about three people. And I'm like, I want that community. You can't live in a town and only have three people show up in a story, right? Especially a small town. Because there's no way you're living in a small town and only three people show up in the story, because everybody's in everybody else's business. But anyway, so.
All of the characters are purposeful. I mean, they're all there for a reason. It's not just fill up the town with crazy reasons to laugh, because I mean, we could do that, but every one of the characters is there for a reason.
Ron and I had a moment at one point where I messaged her and I was like, this is such a deep level of character development in this, like, I think it was 6 or 7 lines. And it's when Penny goes to Dylan's apartment and there's a doorman and she calls him by his name, like he has a name tag on. And you put in there that, I can't remember the exact words and I can't, but about the fact that she's been in that position where she was just a nameless, faceless person. And she always makes it a point to recognize the small people that always often get overlooked by calling them by their name. And it's so stupid, but it's something I always do. Like I'll go into a fast food restaurant and if somebody has a name tag on, I'll call them by their name because I always want someone to feel seen. And that said so much about Penny and about her background and about who she was as a person in that little, I think it was 6 lines. And I'm like, how do you put so much of someone's personality into 6 lines? It's because of the way they react to other people. Yep. And you never see that person again, but it was so pivotal to me that it was like, this is who she is. This is the type of person she is, that she recognizes people who she sees as like her, people who she sees as the unrecognized, the unseen, the background, and makes them feel seen. That just said so much about Penny to me. So all right, I'm going to step off my soapbox there, but I think I messaged Ron a couple times about that. So it's just me. Anyway, Julie, you had a great question, and I need the answer to this.
Can you and Mr. Maxwell create this town in real life so we can move to it?
It's this first town that I've, like, since, I mean, Lucy Scores Blue Moon, like, I have said for years, like, I want to live there. It was a happy, happy place. And the deeper I get into Chance Lake, I have that feeling, like, I would love to live there. And I grew up in a small town, and it's, you know, it's different growing up in really teeny tiny towns. So to be able to create these that people still love and want to move to is really special.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Oh, smell the noise.
So, okay. We're going to follow up. Susie, you get to follow up with that one.
Well, tell us more about these newcomers.
Oh, so the Westbrooks are being recovered. Emily Wittig is working on them right now. I just got a message that she's in process. And she's very excited about working on them. They will not be Manchester covers and they will not be illustrated covers. That's all I can say, but they will be more uniform. And I'm very excited. They're going to show, it's really hard because I wrote something that doesn't really exist. Small town billionaires is not a genre, mm-hmm. which I didn't think about when I started. I just did it. And there seems to be, you know, obviously there's people who read them and love them. You know, if I can, that very first book that I desperately, you know, cringe at sometimes, people read that, a lot of people read that and love it. So there's a want for it there. So we're trying to meld those two, the small town with the billionaire. So that's what the covers are going to focus on.
I love that.
I happen to love small town billionaire romances. They are out there. They don't tend to see their own genre as much. You're right. There really isn't. It's like there's small town romance and there's billionaire romance.
The covers for those are very, very different. Like,
yeah.
It's really hard to mix the two. But if anyone can do it, Emily can. I'm really excited. You know, she... that crossed my heart first. And, you know, while, you know, I have grown from that one, the story of Dex and Lainey is still, it's still probably one of my favorites just because it was raw and real and it was just for me. You know, that story was meant just for me. It wasn't my plan to publish it. So I will always love that story, even if I wish that I could make every one of them where I am today. But It'll obviously be a special story. So I'm excited to see what she does with that one.
Just because I'm a numbers geek when it comes to your books. And I remember when we were like thrilled that it hit 200 reads and rates and ratings. Cross My Heart today has 3,975 ratings and reviews on Amazon. And I remember when it had less than 200.
Me too. You know, and I'm really hard on myself about that book, and I really shouldn't be. The amount of people, the amount of emails that I get every week about that story, like, still surprises me. But I think it's because I went into it without any expectations for myself, which is very rare. I have really high expectations for myself, and I demand a lot of myself. So I think it shows in that story. I knew that story just came from my heart. Like, that's all I was worried about, was just getting the story out. So when people are still, you know, 3 years later emailing me saying how much they love the story and how much it resonated with them, or how much they cried over, you know, Lainey's background, it tells me I'm doing something right, which sometimes I need. So.
Do you want to know what else tells you you're doing something right? Your first kiss, just because I'm a numbers geek. And because I remember how long it took us to get 200 and 200, I mean, your last first kiss has 480 ratings on Amazon today.
And it's a week. It's out a week.
Out a week. And
yep. I love
it. It's still sitting. We didn't talk about it. Your first ranked, like, top 100 Amazon Kindle Store rankings.
Yeah.
You're back there today. It's at number 99.
99.
Really?
I just, yep. Yes.
I just pulled it up too. Yep.
Yeah. Congratulations.
It's very exciting. I mean, I think I'm going to get emotional. Sometimes I'm so hard on myself. And I work so hard to make the stories better for the readers that I forget that I'm just a person, you know, like, the stories are coming from my brain and my heart. And so when people can relate to those, it means a lot.
I'm going to cry.
I didn't know that it had hit 99 again, because when I looked earlier, it was 105. So I was still going to say that's pretty, pretty phenomenal. But yeah, it's back at 99.
I guess it's for you.
All right, so let's we're gonna get our shit together here, and so we're gonna leave on a very happy note. We're gonna leave on a really excited note. We're gonna do our random 10 rapid fire questions, and then we're gonna all go find tissues, which is something that I'll tell everybody that you should do before you get to sit down with one of Avery's books anyway, is grab tissues, because you're not going to go through a Costco size box with every book like you will with Preston.
I went through like four of them.
I know, right? Yeah. Or Ashton. I think Ashton did that to me too, where I was like, damn it, more tissues. So definitely grab a nice cup of tea and tissues for Avery's books, because at some point in it, I'm going to say this way. At some point in it, you will use the tissues to blot your eyes and blow your nose. And at some point, you will also need to use the tissues to clean up the tea that you spit all over your Kindle when you laugh uproariously at something that you just cannot stop the spit take. That happens too. A lot. My poor Kindle. So let's do our random 10 questions. Julie, you get to go first.
Flip flops or heels?
Flip flops.
Dogs or cats?
Dogs.
Beachfront home or mountain cabin?
Beach.
Chocolate chip or oatmeal raisin?
Chocolate chip, although if it was chocolate chip oatmeal, I would do that.
Coffee or tea?
Coffee.
Kindle or paperback?
Kindle.
Billionaire or blue collar?
Billionaire.
Read the book or watch the movie?
Read the book.
Pizza and Netflix or light in a fancy restaurant?
Depends on who I'm with.
What I'm feeling.
the time.
Mood reader or plan TBR?
Yeah, I that's a hard one. I go both ways, but I think I'm struggling right now just because Mr. Maxwell and I have been ships passing in the night. So right now I would probably say a candlelit dinner because that would mean that there's no children around.
Nice. Okay.
Mood reader or plan TBR?
Mood reader. I only keep two or three books on my Kindle because it gives me anxiety otherwise.
There you go.
I might need to try that.
I don't even know how many are on my Kindle right now.
No luck, Michelle.
I think got mine rid is of the TBR. I totally blew Audrey 2 away. I deleted the whole thing and I'm like, now I'm just waiting for, you know, people to feed me things of read this next.
Which seems to be working
pretty well because, yeah, that TBR can get out of control.
I
applaud you for that. Do you want to share what you're reading now?
I would if I could remember it. gosh, put me on the spot. Let's see.
Okay, I'm going to take you off the spot. No worries. Because you're also writing and that takes up a lot of time.
Oh, Dr. Perfect by Louise Bay. I just started it. I got like 3 pages in.
Ooh. Okay.
I really like her. I like her writing.
Yeah, me too.
Cool.
Adding it awesome. To the TBR that doesn't exist anymore.
Yes, it does.
Well, she recommended it though.
Yeah. Is there anything else that you want to tell us that we didn't ask?
Even though Cross My Heart was my first story, it's not as bad as I made it sound.
Oh, it's not bad at all.
It's not bad at all.
You have all of us.
My whole thing with that and me wanting to change it is that I really struggle with putting things out that are not my best. You know, I won't even give it to the editor until I feel like I've done absolutely everything I can do. And so knowing that there's work out there that I've improved on is really hard for me. Like it's a trigger and it kind of hurts my soul a little bit to know that they're not getting the best of me. You know, I always want like the best that I can do out there. And the reality is in order to keep moving, I have to keep
moving forward.
And just let that one be what it is, because at the time it was a game changer for me. You know, it really was my stepping stone into where I am now. And so I have to, you know, just like the baby shoes in, you know, the growing up, I have to, you know, Cross My Heart was my baby book. And
I think that you, if you look at your 12 books, 13 since you added yourself, if you look at that progression, where you started it with Cross My Heart is kindergarten. You don't pick on a kindergartner about what they do. You say it's fabulous and you stick it on your refrigerator.
I was just, oh my God, get out of my brain. Because I was just thinking when the kid comes home, you know, when Kenzie comes home with that heart that's colored all different colors and it's out of the lines, you never look at it and say, oh it's man, ugly. That sucks. No. You say that is the most amazing thing I've ever seen from that person. And what crossed my heart was the best you had and the best you did for where you were.
Exactly.
And it's still people's favorite. There's still people and they still go back to Dex and Lainey. There's actually a lot of them. So I need to remember that.
So cut yourself some slack.
I'm going to read Cross My Heart after watching this.
Well, my friend, she just read the message that Loki's next and she said, yay! So
everybody starts somewhere.
You got her
and
hooked.
You need to, we need to, as a just in general people, we need to value our starting points as the kick that we needed to move forward, and value where we were at that point and recognize where we were at that point as the best that we were at that point, and understand that other people are going to value it just as much as we did and we do.
Right. And one of the things that I brag about you the most about is that I started with Cross My Heart and I fell in love with it. I said, this, she's got something. There's just something about this author. And I wasn't working for you then. I was a fan. And in every single book, I could say, oh, she got so much better, and she got so much better, and she got so much better. And I think in my mind, somewhere along Seth's book, which was our first full process together, I thought, you know, she's pretty damn good. You know, she's going to make this work. And you kept getting better. So I thought that maybe you'd hit a plateau at some point, and you haven't. So don't ever say nasty things about Cross My Heart, because it is your cornerstone, and it's a solid one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Value it. Value where you were then. Value where you are now. And know that.
Where are you going to be?
You're going to be B. Yeah. Where are you going to be?
Surprised that it's my debut. And that's what I need to remember. Like, mm-hmm. I don't have to go back and fix, you know, my mistakes. Like, people fell in love with my debut novel when I knew nothing. I knew nothing about writing. I knew nothing about the process. I didn't have a process. So, you know, I try to do right by my readers by making sure that I work harder with each one to get better. And so if I keep doing that, I won't have time to worry about the other ones. So
there you go.
Exactly. Thanks for hanging out with us.
Thanks for having me.
Avery, thank you so much. And I can't wait to see you in July at SAS. I'll be there. I'm super excited. We can't wait for the next book and the next opportunity to hang out. So, but thank you so much for joining us.
Anytime. Thanks for having me.